This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 163, Strip Down and Get Physical. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Philip Gilfus. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including plans for a second season of The Red Shirt Diaries, and which Enterprise fans would most like to command. Then in the feature, we roll up our sleeves with Charlene Schmidt and Suzanne Abbott to discuss the Voyager episode, Macrocosm. So let's step into The Ready Room. Hello, Philip. It's great to have you here in the Ready Room with me. I'm a little bit surprised to see you just wearing that yellow shirt. I got all dressed up because I heard that you were doing the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, you know, I always hear that when you're on shows with Matt Rushing, he's always wearing some sort of Star Trek shirt. And so I thought I'd kind of be in a more command presence this time since I was going to be a co-host this week.
All right. Well, I was, you know, hoping to see you in your sequin covered outfit. And how did that go? How did the performance go?
It went very well. For most people that are familiar with Rocky Horror Picture Show, they know that's sort of a traditional thing to do during Halloween. So I did the four shows Halloween week. And it's interesting. There's probably a reason only one or two photos exist on the interwebs that I've posted from that performance. It's just a very naked cast. You know, there's no way to go around it. It's basically the naked now combined with naked time. Combined with Quark's latest holosuite program. So, but anyway.
Wow. All right. That would make a great holosuite program, would it not?
Oh, yes. Yes. I could imagine. Now I'm imagining Rocky Horror with an all Vulcan cast.
Sounds like a video project for Trek FM right there.
Though I do have to admit, when I was approached about doing the time warp again, I thought this was going to be a play about humpbacked whales. But then I learned, no. So,
did you walk in and say, wait a minute, where are the nuclear vessels?
And then I was like, maybe, is there humpbacked people?
No, whales.
Oh.
Philip, whales.
Oh. Okay.
All right. Well, let's get into the news here. We just have a few things today. You mentioned the naked time just a moment ago, and we are going to talk about that briefly when we talk about the Red Shirt Diaries. Before that, though, we want to send our condolences, first of all, to the families of the pilots of Virgin Galactic's Spaceship Two, which suffered a tragedy this week as they were testing out a new fuel system. And the ship, which was previously known as the VSS Enterprise, crashed. And that happened on October 31st. And there's an investigation ongoing right now. But it's a tragedy for sure, and it also highlights how difficult this road is for us to get from where we are today to the Star Trek future.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things, and I know probably a lot of our listeners know, but, well, I don't know. I'm young, and I know you're older than me, Chris, but even you in the grand scheme of things are young. When we think about the space program, at least the American one, but worldwide, the space program for the past, I don't know, 60, 70 years, we think of the accomplishments. We think of the moon landing. We think of Mir. We think of the space station and all that. But like, people have died in the course of this space program on throughout the world. And it's something we don't talk about because we talk about the, you know, the big important things. But this is obviously, and not to trivialize it, but it does remind me of the Q quote that this is not, you know, it's dangerous out there. It's not for the timid. Yeah. And certainly I agree that our thoughts and prayers are with the, not only those with who were died, but those who were injured as well. And that they were, you know, giving this sacrifice for something they believed in, something they loved. And I know you as a Warp 5 co-host, at least in the fictional realm, you know, see this from what Enterprises was all about and how, you know, it talked about the early days of Starfleet, that, you know, doing these test flights, that people, you're risking your life to make a mark for the future.
Yeah, I think that we've become accustomed to a very safe form of space exploration where we tend to send out probes. We don't do very many manned missions anymore. And when we do send people up, we're just sending them up to the International Space Station and bringing them back down. And it's something that has become fairly routine. And we have had some tragedies in the past. You know, I can still remember exactly where I was when Challenger exploded and where I was when I heard that Columbia broke up on reentry. And so these things do happen. And I did want to share with everyone an excerpt from the statement from Virgin Galactic. And Sir Richard Branson has said that they are going to continue to push forward because the work that they're doing is very important. And they said that for Virgin Galactic, everything rests on our vision of creating accessible and democratized space that will benefit humanity in countless ways for generations to come. Like early air or sea technologies, the development is not easy and comes with great risks. But our team of more than 400 dedicated engineers and technicians are committed to realizing the potential of this endeavor. From research to travel to innovation, we believe that the technology our industry is pioneering is crucial to the advancement of humanity. While this has been a tragic setback, we are moving forward and will do so deliberately and with determination. We are continuing to build the second Spaceship 2, serial number 2, which is currently about 65% complete, and we will continue to advance our mission over the coming weeks and months. With the guidance of the NTSB and the assurance of a safe path forward, we intend to move ahead with our testing program and have not lost sight of our mission to make space accessible for all. We owe it to all of those who have risked and given so much to stay the course and deliver on the promise of creating the first commercial space line. So really, Philip, for me, beyond the first commercial space line, because let's remember that Virgin Galactic is initially anyway interested in sort of like a space tourism industry. But the technologies that they're developing are really important for us just getting out there in general. And I've been disappointed in my lifetime that what seemed so promising when I was young, that we were going to continue to go out into space, has kind of dwindled. And I feel like we just kind of, everyone lost their interest at a time when it's becoming more and more important that we really do take those steps out there.
Yeah, and it's interesting, at least here in America, that pretty much this is now in the private sector. I mean, NASA's still there and doing things, but it doesn't get the support it needs. And so the private sector is sort of pushing this. And so this was actually a bad week, though, for private sector space exploration, because you also had the Antares launch disaster. Luckily, no one was injured in that one. But unfortunately, you did also have an explosion there of a rocket that was going to go to the ISS. But I think one thing that hits me in that statement is Spaceship 2. You know, it kind of reminds me, again, to go in the fictional universe, Babylon 5. You know, humans, Babylon station blew up, so we built a 2, we built a 3, because that's what humans do. We don't just lie down. We build a 2, we build an A, and or, you know, whatever. We keep on going, and I think that's the eternal optimism of Star Trek and of humanity here in the 21st century, that we keep on going.
Absolutely. Well said. So I'm glad to see that they are pushing forward. It would be really easy for everyone to just step back now and say, you know, this is too dangerous. Let's just leave this to the governments and let's just not worry about this. But I'm really glad to see that they're going to keep moving forward with this. So best wishes to Virgin Galactic and to everyone moving forward. And I know that I'll always be there supporting them, and I hope everyone else will as well. So, Philip, let's go on to a more fun topic here, the Red Shirt Diaries, which I know you really enjoyed, and they've got all 10 episodes out there right now. And it's really fun, by the way, to just watch, because they're short, they're on average 3 minutes, and you can just watch all 10 straight through. And it's a really fun experience, but they are launching a campaign. They have already launched a campaign on Indiegogo to fund season 2. I just had Ashley and Jason, that's actress Ashley Victoria Robinson, and filmmaker Jason Inman on Continuing Mission, which is out there now. And we talked about season 2. So first of all, what did you think about season 1?
Oh, goodness. Season 1, I mean, look, I think when you hear red shirts and all the jokes, you know, you're like, okay, you know, there's a lot to be mined there. But, I mean, Anson Williams, I mean, come on. Come on. It is something I just want to watch. I mean, the great story is what I'm talking about, of course. That's something I want to watch constantly. And I think it's funny, but it's also to use a very cliche, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's very much a love letter to Star Trek. But just to see those original series episodes come alive in so small ways. What can we take from this one episode,
right,
where we're just in this room, you know, where there's no away team? Like, I think one of the best things about being creative is limits. And so the limit is we have to stay in these quarters and we can't show any actors' faces. Well, I mean, they've done a little bit, but like, and to me, that makes the best thing of how can we do this episode that took place on a planet or in another time or another dimension, and they just do it great. And I love the episodes we've seen, and there's so much more I'm looking forward to in the rest of, you know, TOS season 1, but now in Red Shirt Diary season 2.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really, really fun. They talked to me about their plans for season 2. And some of the things that they want to do if the Indiegogo goes really well. One of them is to build a new set, build new quarters for Ensign Williams. Now, how do you feel about Ensign Williams getting an upgrade in quarters, Philip?
Oh, wait. Can she get a roommate? I don't cost eat a lot. I mean, I will totally, I'm available is what I'm saying. I mean, to be a roommate.
Okay, first of all, Ashley, cover Jason's ears. Ashley, if you're listening to this, Philip is offering to move in with you.
I mean, fictionally. I mean, like, as a character, it wouldn't have to. I mean, I have this gold shirt I'm wearing.
So she may be getting an upgrade in quarters, and they also want to get proper TOS uniforms for everyone because they shot the first 10 episodes and produced them and released them on just $500. Which is absolutely nothing when it comes to doing this. And so they used, you know, what they had available. And it wasn't always completely authentic to TOS. In fact, Ensign Williams, she doesn't have any sleeves on her uniform. And they even addressed that in one of the stories.
Well, you know, I think maybe that was a season one thing. Mini skirts, mini sleeves. I think that makes sense to me, you know. She doesn't have a beehive, though, but that's fine. She has a very good security haircut. I think that's very practical. And so,
you do need a practical haircut when you work in security, yeah. Don't you?
Though, my question is, if they not only meet their goal, but if they go over it, will they then remaster season one to include improved effects for TOS, just like the TOS Blu-ray did?
That would be interesting to see. I think maybe they could do something with the light when Baylock is offering her Tranya when she's trying to sleep.
Yes. I can see it. I mean, I definitely think about it a lot. The series is, I think about
maybe,
it a lot.
Maybe they could use some of that money to buy some clothes for all the extras in the Naked Time.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to do. But I mean, seriously, if anyone has not checked out Red Shirt Diaries, again, like Chris said, it's very short, each episode, but it's great. It just catches you right away, or at least it does to me. And I mean, even if you just know a little bit about TOS, or if you're, you know, like us, we really like TOS, you know, you're just going to love everything they do with it. And you're going to look forward to, like, how are they going to do the next episode? How are they going to do the next episode? And I think definitely you should take part in the Indiegogo campaign and help support them, because, hey, they got a lot to go. I want to see maybe a Lieutenant Williams in the motion picture outfit. I'm just throwing that out there.
So she's going to get a promotion by the time of the motion picture.
Right.
And then you're going to see her in that outfit.
All right.
All right. Interesting. Well, their goal is very modest, $2,800. As of the time we're recording this, they are at $1,361, which is 49%, and they have 33 days to go. And when we recorded Continuing Mission yesterday with them, they were around, I'm going to say, 850, 900. And so they've added all of that just in one day right here. So I am pretty sure they're going to hit their $2,800 goal. And I hope everyone will go support them because they're doing some really creative and really fun things there. And if you want to know more about the project, tune in to Continuing Mission 25. It just came out yesterday. You can find it in the master feed. You can also go to the main feed for Continuing Mission in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Or go to our website, trek.fm/continuing-mission/25, and you can stream from there. But we had a blast talking about the feedback that they've gotten from viewers about season one, as well as their plans, not just for the sets and the costumes, but story ideas for season two as well. And I think you'll really enjoy it. So go check that out, Continuing Mission 25, which is titled, That's Just Her Being Sassy.
I mean, I almost feel like they should call the next season, which I know there's a lot of episodes to go, but I think it should just be called Countdown to Spock's Brain. That's pretty much what it should be called, because
we did mention Spock's Brain. Yeah. I should point out real quick that season two of the Red Shirt Diaries is not season two of the original series. It's the remaining 19 episodes from season one of the original series. So right. They're going to do almost double the number. And then you'll have the entire season one being told to you by Ensign Williams, so you can find out what went on behind the scenes.
They are on the Battlestar Galactica plan of releasing episodes. This is season 1.5.
Is that right? Oh, gosh. Those DVD sets. I remember that. All right. So to watch the episodes, go to theredshirtdiaries.com, and that's the best place to go because you'll be able to click through and find out everything about the series there, as well as watch the episodes. You'll also find them on YouTube. And again, Indiegogo, go there, Indiegogo, IndieGogo.com, and search Red Shirt Diaries, and it'll come right up for you there. And they have a video there also, really nicely done video of Ashley and Jason telling you about why they created the series, their experiences from doing the first 10 episodes, and what they plan to do with the money that they raise. Okay, let's move on, Philip. We have one more thing to talk about here today, and this is a StarTrek.com poll, which we love to talk about here on the Ready Room.
I'm all about elections.
Right, it is election day there in the U.S., isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I have a feeling that on the ballot in the U.S. today, no one saw this question. But it was asked by StarTrek.com, which Enterprise would you choose to captain? There were more than 15,000 votes. And Philip, what were the results?
Well, first of all, this is an odd question because there's so many ways you could interpret it. Like, is it like what's the best Enterprise or which crew do you like the best as captain? Mm-hmm. Or so I don't know. You know, this will be interesting to talk about what we think people meant. But of course, the results are not surprising at all. I mean, called it with 32%, the top Enterprise that should be captained the most was Enterprise E with 32%. And second place, of course, was the Enterprise D at 25%. And I think they made other Enterprises. I'm not sure. I haven't really watched any other shows. But no. And third place
this
was...
This is the only two you know, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's a C that I saw in an episode once. But anyway. No, but so E and D both came first and second place. Kind of closest third was the original, 1701, with 16%. And did this surprise you, Chris? Sandwiched in fourth place was the Enterprise J, with 10%.
Yeah.
I don't... Yeah. With like the 5 seconds we saw, I guess just really... I don't know. And then rounding out was the Enterprise A with 9%, the Enterprise C with 4%, and the Enterprise Sad Trombone B with 3%.
All right. Yeah, it's really surprising. First of all, the Enterprise A, I don't know if they mean the Enterprise A itself only, or do they also mean the movie Refit Enterprise? Because the Enterprise A, nothing worked on that ship.
It's true, and I don't know if you're captaining the Refit, are you just going to blow it up? I mean, that's not really.
Well, speaking of that, that's why I was highly concerned about the 4% of individuals who voted for the Enterprise C. So here's a ship that you know is going to be destroyed, and yet that's the ship that you want to choose? I mean, yeah. You know exactly how you're going to die.
Spoilers. Now, I'm almost wondering, maybe this is a misprint on the poll. Maybe they meant Enterprise JJ, because that's not on here. there's sometimes I want a beer, and I'm on the bridge, and anyway.
You just head down to engineering, hit the tap.
Keesner there is behind the bar, and he can reach up top. He stands on something. So.
Well, see, that would have made more sense in the poll, right? Sadly, it's not a typo. They actually have a picture of the Enterprise J on StarTrek.com. And, I mean, I have a real bone to pick with StarTrek.com on this, because this is not a write-in thing. When they do these polls, their staff, they put the options in, and you have to choose from the options that they put. Where's the NX-01 on this poll? It's not on here, but yet the Enterprise J, which we saw for, like you said, all of a few seconds in an episode of Enterprise,
is here. Isn't that even more insulting in an episode of Enterprise, and they don't even mention Enterprise?
Yeah, they don't mention the title ship of the show, but they do mention a ship that we barely saw in an episode of the show.
Oh.
That no one knows anything about other than it's really bizarre looking, and Starfleet would never build a ship that looked like that.
Well, Chris, I have to ask you, when you read that question, what does that mean to you, and what would have been your first choice?
See, like you said at the beginning, there are so many ways that you can look at this. Do you like the ship? Do you like the crew? Do you like the ship's role in history? I don't know. I think that, for me, the original 1701 is a very attractive choice, because you're exploring and you're getting to see things for the first time, but you have enough technology behind you that you're not going to be out there spending 3 hours trying to see if you can chip the corner off of an asteroid like Reed does with the NX-01 early on. Whereas, you know, if you choose the Enterprise D, I hope you like to play taxi driver for diplomats, because that's what you're going to be doing a lot of the time.
It also blows up. Spoilers.
Right. But at least you have a chance to get off of it. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, Enterprise B, you've got to wait until Tuesday to get any packages delivered.
And that thing turns like a hippopotamus, I want to say. So if you're a con officer, that is not the one to pick.
I don't know. You know, if you're into luxury, Enterprise D would be your choice. If you're into, you know, warships, the Enterprise E would be a good choice.
You know, the way you just said luxury, I just felt like we were doing a car commercial for the new name in luxury. The Galaxy class now introduced. The NC, like 1701 DS.
That's right. Now with integrated L cars. Well, I will tell you, Philip, I don't care which one you choose. I am not going to budge on the sticker price.
Oh, man. Well, if you have to ask how much the NC-1701D is, you probably can't afford it. Because money doesn't exist. Anyway, it's a really long story.
So, I don't know. Which one would you choose here? Are you just an E guy?
Well, because again, it's how do you ask it? To me, when I read it, it's just talking about the ship. No people, which I don't know. When you cat, then really it should mean the crew, but I'm just thinking about the hull. I have a bizarre crush. This is a theme for this news part. I have a bizarre crush on the Enterprise C. I'm going to be honest. I really, the more I see it, the more I want to learn more about it. And it's sort of that bridge between 24th century and Kirk movie time. And I really would love to just try that thing out.
So you'd like to be the captain of the Enterprise C so that you can take it for a spin, kick the warp nacelles, really get to know that ship.
That's right. You know, I feel like, you know, I get to wear the maroons uniform, and I think it would be cool, you know, go down in history and make sure history never forgets the name. What's the name of it? That's the one, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those polls where you can't really quibble with who wins or who ends up at the bottom because it's so subjective. My only problem with the poll is that why is the Enterprise J on there and the NX-01 is not even an option?
Well, what about the HMS Enterprise? I mean, I think I would just love to be out in the middle of the sea, you know, no one to call you, you know, just the wind and the sea and the stars to guide you.
You get really excited about the sails like Riker would.
Oh, yeah. I think, and also just the fact that is today going to be that day that I'm going to be able to grab that badge?
Don't you think Riker is so in love with that because he's just hoping that he'll see some mermaids?
Well, I think some sirens would be interesting to encounter. Yeah, I think there's a lot to see out there in that nice blue ocean that apparently half of it is holographic, which doesn't make sense. But anyway, I think it's a wonderful, wonderful ship.
All right, so there's the poll. Let us know which Enterprise you would want to captain. You can find us in our listeners group. That's a great place to find us on Facebook. It's called the Babel Conference. It's a closed group, so you do need to join, but just go to Facebook and type the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field, or go to our website and click discussion on the top menu bar, and that'll take you right over there. Click join, and I'll let you right on in. Or you can find us on Twitter. Trek.fm is our username there as well. All right, Philip, well, that's everything that we have in the news today. So let's go ahead and bring in the ladies, Charlene and Suzanne, to talk some Voyager. Have you ever felt that Star Trek episodes are a bit too talky, a bit too high and mighty? Ever wish you could have a dash of Rambo with your Star Trek? Well, Brannon Braga thought so, and thus sent Janeway, ripped biceps and all, to save the crew from a giant bug infestation in the third season episode Macrocosm. Today we're going to talk all about this action-packed story, and to help us do that, we're joined by Trek.fm's Facebook maven and Janeway fanfic expert, Suzanne Abbott. Suzanne, welcome back.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Great to have you. And from our Voyager show, To the Journey, now camping out.
To the Journey!
Sorry, that was really squeaky.
Now camping out in the ready room, apparently, is Charlene Schmidt. Char, I would say welcome back, but I don't think you ever left, did you?
No, I've got a cot out in the back, and I'm hanging out with Argyle in the Jeffries tube.
Oh, man. Having some good gin and tonics, though, I bet.
Tell you what, I don't remember what's happened the last 2 weeks because I've been drinking so much. It's like, that's all that there is. There's no food. There's no water. That's all there is to subside on. So I got to do what I got to do, man.
Well, Char, this is how you know if you've been fully accepted by Argyle in his natural habitat. Has he shown you where the peepholes are?
All of them. I've seen everything.
Oh, wow.
After all that drinking, could you use a Tic Tac? Oh, wait, that's the wrong one.
No, no comment. No, Philip, no Tic Tacs. We're only giving out Tac Tacs today.
Yeah, that's bad enough. That's enough.
That's the off-brand breathman.
All right, so let's get into the discussion here about Macrocosm. Of course, we always kick off the show with a synopsis. And Char, since you host our Voyager show, I'm actually going to let you do the synopsis today. Give us a very brief overview of Macrocosm.
Okay.
Why are you taking your top off, Char?
Well, I'm doing the synopsis. I forget this is an audio podcast.
How
you can't
do
actually
you do a
see
synopsis,
this happening.
Philip.
Yeah, I was reenacting the episode, but never mind. Okay, so this is the one where Janeway strips down to her tank top, breaks out the compression phaser rifles, and shoots big bugs.
The end.
That's the story.
That's a story. But don't forget, you know, people criticize Enterprise for finding ways, you know, to show some skin on the screen and kind of get things a little bit racier. In the middle of this story, I mean, of all the holodeck programs that Janeway could have used, no, she has to use the one where everyone's in their bikinis walking around in a resort.
Yeah, this was the season where the big holographic program of the year was Baywatch in space.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I was waiting for the Benny Hinn music to be playing while everyone was running, but it just wasn't.
Okay, so that's the synopsis. I think that's a pretty good synopsis, Char, because that's pretty much the story, right?
Pretty much. There's like these tack things in
nice
the
moments
beginning.
Along the way.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, well,
Janeway puts her hands on her hips and pisses people off, and Neelix somehow manages to redeem. Okay, now that's the synopsis.
Okay, so that's the first thing that I want to talk about is don't talk to me in cramped spaces, the language of the tack. And I think it's hilarious that the genesis of this whole idea is the fact that Kate Mulgrew puts her hands on her hips all the time as Janeway, and they decided, like, okay, let's play with that. Let's have an alien race whose language involves body movement and gestures and posture, and Janeway's going to offend them.
Indeed, she did.
If this had been a TNG episode, does that mean, like, Picard would have said, like, engaged and done his finger, and then, like, all the tack would have been like, you said what about his cousin?
Exactly. I was actually thinking more of the Riker maneuver. Like, that would have been really upsetting, or would have been, some sort of suggestion.
Over their leader in order to sit down.
That is awesome. Yeah. Like, that the Enterprise D, they have to go, they're faring diplomats, of course, and then they have to go and they have to do some kind of negotiation. And Riker is going to be the lead negotiator, and it turns out that it's with the tack, and they're extremely offended anytime you put your leg up on anything.
Yeah, because it's a sexual advance, and it's really forward.
He could be propositioning.
Exactly.
Although Riker is propositioning them.
Oh, that's true. He usually was.
Yeah, so he was, and he didn't completely mean to, but the implication was far worse than he was actually suggesting at the time. Like, you know, hey, if you're interested. But to them, to the tack, it was like, let's hop in the sack right now. And they were insulted.
Right. That meant, like, go straight to home plate in tack.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And, no home runs for Riker.
Now, Chris, is that a Ben Sisko saying?
Go straight to home plate, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure there would have been at least one tack that would have taken Riker up on that, though.
You think so?
One or both?
Hmm.
Oh, my.
What are you saying, Philip? Tack and tack?
At the same time or not?
All right, guys, let's get back onto the language thing here. So here's the thing. A lot of people kind of criticize Star Trek sometimes for the fact that everyone speaks English. Well, of course, you've got to tell a story in 42, 45 minutes, so everyone needs to speak English, right? But one thing that I like about Enterprise is the fact that they actually make an effort to show that there are many different languages and types of languages, and they do that more so than any of the other series do. But here on Voyager, early on, third season, they're making an effort to give some kind of unique flavor to an alien language. And it comes across very hilarious, I think, especially because of Neelix doing it as well. Of course, this is where Neelix is supposed to know a lot about the Delta Quadrant. And apparently he knew, like, this is how you talk to these guys. But I was just trying to figure out, like, what is the origin of this language? And I had two thoughts. One is that the tack were a race of mimes who over time gained the ability to speak, and they just weren't willing to give up their previous language. And so they kind of merged them together in sort of a mime fusion language. And the other one, and Philip, you'll like this, you know, picking up on our Friends theme from our recent Earl Grey Orb crossover.
Oh, is this the one with the tack?
Yeah, I was wondering if Joey was a tack, and it was kind of the jazz hands thing. You know, the episode where Joey teaches dance class, but he can't really dance, and he does the jazz hands? Because if there's one thing that's constant throughout the tack language, it's apparently jazz hands.
Yeah, I think they took lessons from Richard Simmons. He knows
so
jazz
does
hands.
Does that mean when Janeway put her hands on her hips, she was saying, how you doing?
Exactly.
Here we go again.
You know, you mentioned this on the other side of the room, Chris.
The other side of the room.
That I had actually forgotten that this was the cold open to this episode. Uh-huh. And so when it began, I was sort of like cut, or, you know, so surprised that I was laughing probably twice as much because I'd forgotten. You know, I was all ready for, like, sweaty Janeway shooting things. And I'm like, oh, no, this is how this starts. So this is hilarious.
Suzanne, what do you think
about
this?
You got to build up to the sweaty Janeway slowly.
That's what Chakotay always says.
Are you saying this is the foreplay to the episode?
Yes. Yes, it is.
A few small gestures.
Tack, tack, foreplay? You know, really?
Oh, wow.
I did not think of them like that until just now. I'm not sure how I feel about that, guys.
Well, but Chris, I have to say, from a Warp 5 and Enterprise perspective, like, this is very reminiscent of Enterprise, because I almost felt like, you know, just put replace T'Pol, you know, and Neelix, and then Janeway and Archer, where, like, Archer's, like, trying to explain, oh, this is what I meant, and T'Pol's like, shh, shh, don't say anything.
That's a really good point,
I'm fixing it right now.
I could see that happening. Just, yeah, the whole T'Pol body language, just that look that she gives Archer sometimes. Just shut up. I'll take care of this.
Suzanne, what do you think about the tack-tack in their language here?
I saw them more as a psychotic interpretive dancers.
Oh, I like that.
Mm.
Just the wild gesturing. It's like, I really don't know what you're trying to say, but I hear you speaking, but your movements are distracting, and but I couldn't look
maybe
away.
Maybe it's like interpretive dance meets punk rock in space.
Is this the Cirque du Soleil planet?
Cirque du Soleil.
It could be. That makes a lot of sense. Yes.
I think
I'm gonna go
they
with
needed
that.
To merge. I think the Tac-Tac should have been in the Thaw with the crazy.
I think so.
They would have really gotten along in that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Only if fear was able to kill them.
Yeah.
I think it would be hard because when they put their head in the guillotine, it's going to keep moving around so much, you know. Like, I don't want to be killed like this. So how are you going to...
Their hands would be up in
there, too. Right. The jazz hands would be distracting them. So.
Right.
I was also thinking that it's a good thing that we did not see the scene that may have happened, that it's just not in the episode, where, you know how the captain always invites guests to dinner, to dine with the captain? Mm-hmm. It would be really difficult to talk during a meal with the Tac-Tac. How would they eat and talk at the same time?
Is this like just like half the food's on the floor, knocking over the dishes?
And they probably couldn't sit at the table either.
I have a feeling they would sit at the table, kind of like how Mork did in Mork and Mindy, where they're upside down. Again, another Cirque du Soleil kind of thing. Just like they have to parkour everything.
After all, I was thinking, there must be no such thing as a Tac-Tac podcast. How would you know what they're saying?
It would have to be video.
It'd have to be a video
podcast.
It'd
be a vlog.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Video, definitely. Well, speaking of podcasts, don't you guys love that in this episode, Neelix is a space podcaster with his Good Morning Voyager show?
Formerly known as A Briefing with Neelix, apparently.
Yeah.
There's a reason why that never happened.
Maybe Neelix has started his own Voyager podcast network, just like we have Trek FM. He's got A Briefing with Neelix. He's got Good Morning Voyager.
Wait, is he on his...
And Samantha Wildman is the only one that watches.
Is he on as many shows as you are, Chris?
I don't know.
He's probably working his way up to that.
Probably. I mean, he's got a lot of free time. Basically, he cooks for the crew and does their laundry, which we know from a very early episode of To the Journey.
This is true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know what they meant when they said the dialogue that, like, I forget if it was Janeway or Neelix, but they're like, this show has been playing for 11 hours. And they're like, well, it's you know, set for the playback. I'm like, or do you just have, like, was someone binge watching or binge listening to the Good Morning Voyager show? Like, sometimes, like, on Earl Grey, we'll have listeners who just discover the show and just, you know, listen to it straight. Right. Is this what was happening? Yeah.
It's that damn Netflix feature where while it's rolling the final credits for a show you're watching, it's going to start the next one for you automatically, and then it clips the endings off of shows.
So that's going to survive to the 24th century. Is that a good thing? Are people getting anything done in the future?
See, Elcars must not have that intervention function where Netflix says, continue playing. In other words, like, are you sure you're all right? Then maybe you should call a friend, take a bathroom break,
still
eat.
Move.
No.
Well, let's not forget that this is the third episode after Future's End. So remember that Neelix and Kes, mm-hmm. they're binge watching all of those 20th century soap operas that they stored on the computers while they were there.
So did Neelix start a soap opera then? That's what I need to know.
Maybe he and Kes are doing an audio drama.
The old and the beautiful.
Well, if it's anything like their relationship, it can't be that sexy.
Okay, well, let's move on from this. The thing about this is that this is the cold open, and it really doesn't come into play until late in the episode when the Tac-Tac show back up to cleanse them, which is just like in Extinction on Enterprise, where this race shows up again at the end to cleanse the ship because of the disease. And just in that case, here Janeway has a cure, which they would be happy to share with the aliens as long as they stop trying to destroy the ship.
Well, the thing about this cold open, and not, of course, to bring everything back to TNG, my bailiwick, but it reminds me of either Genesis or Timescape. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's sort of an excuse to, like, okay, these people are totally away from the ship for a while. And then when they come back, something crazy has happened. But, like, I know in a previous Ready Room when you all were doing Cat's Paw, you were talking about Spooky Trek. And, like, to me, this is Spooky Trek. Like, you know, what's going on and things are here and everything's dark and da-da-da-da. So it actually did kind of have, like, a spooky feel to it for a while.
Yeah. It is kind of like being in a haunted house a little bit.
It had a definite horror movie-esque feel when Janeway and Neelix are wandering around the ship. And Neelix has that look of terror on his face, just wondering what's around the next corner after he gets gooed on.
Yeah, what was that? Was that like Bosco that they splashed all over him? Some chocolate syrup there?
It looked awfully sticky.
That was pureed Leola root. That's what they get. Oh.
Is that what it is? You're probably right.
The crew fighting back.
It's probably a practical joke. Like, Tom and Harry have probably rigged all the turbo lifts so that if you press the wrong button, it sprays you with pureed Leola root.
Man, I feel bad for whoever has to clean all that up.
They're probably hoping that it'll happen to the Delaney sisters so that they can then offer to help them clean up.
Yeah, but it keeps happening to the wrong twin for me. So
they kept tricking crewman Shell and Lieutenant Carey. Things didn't work out.
Well, you bring up Tom and B'Elanna, and I don't know, Char, where we are on the Tom B'Elanna scale during this time, but we do get a little, you know, little sparks, little bickering, little
B'Elanna got gooed on.
But Char, they're I don't think that's what Philip is talking about, Char. I think Philip is talking about the kind of
Paris.
The little spat that they had there.
This is the build up to the relationship. It happens later in the season from where we're at in this episode.
I'm not sure I've assembled the right panel here today.
I think Suzanne is quickly becoming my Jenny Zell part two here.
Okay.
And Philip, you're not helping either, and I love it.
No.
I don't know, Char. I think Philip is your Jenny Zell part two.
Well, it's true. It's true. You're coming up with some good ones tonight, buddy. I like it.
That's right.
Cranking
on her estrogen.
If anyone's listening to this show and you haven't listened to Ready Rooms before, go back to the Ready Room 161. 160, right? The Ready Room 160, Cat's Paw. And then you can hear Char and Jenny Zell together.
Yes.
So, but let's talk about the actual premise of this episode. What I find interesting here, I said in my opening that Brandon Braga felt that Star Trek episodes get a little bit too talky sometimes. And of course, this coming from the guy who goes on to write Shuttle Pod 1, which is a great episode, but it is two guys talking to each other in a shuttle for the entire episode. But he said a little bit too talky, a little bit too high and mighty, and he wanted to do some action. And his original idea is he said that he wanted to do an episode with no dialogue at all. It's just Janeway and these viruses around the ship, and there is no dialogue. Then he realized it didn't quite work, so I had to throw in a few acts with some dialogue.
It reminds me of Joss Whedon, who hopefully many people know who that is, but with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that he felt that his that when he was doing that show, that he felt like that was, people said like, oh, you know, it's great dialogue. And he kind of said to himself like, well, is that all I am? Am I nothing but, you know, a dialogue writer? Can I do a successful Buffy without that? And mm-hmm. so he wrote Hush, which has no dialogue. And that was sort of his challenge to himself, because that was a horror episode for those who remember Buffy and that show, where the premise is everyone gets their voices taken away. When I was watching the show, like you said, Chris, this episode, it did strike me on like around the 30-minute mark. I'm like, I don't think anyone has said anything for like 10 minutes. Like after Neelix gets splooged, like it's like, you know, there's no talking for another 10 to 15 minutes. I'm like, oh, this is, and it kind of, you know, that adds to the spooky element.
Mm-hmm. I think what he should have done is he should have gone into the world of music, taken a cue from John Cage, and done like John Cage did with his piece 433, which is 4 minutes and 33 seconds of a pianist sitting at the piano not playing. That's the piece. And of course, the purpose of it is to prove that there is no such thing as silence, because you'll still hear everything else going on in the atmosphere around you. But do a Star Trek episode where Janeway just sits in her chair on the bridge for the entire episode.
Sipping coffee.
Yeah. And drinks. It would coffee. Be 42:33.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there is a thing out there kind of like this. It's kind of the Voyager ambient noise. It's like a YouTube file. Philip, I think you referred me to it.
Oh, have they done one for Voyager
as well? It's like 15 minutes straight of just the Voyager humming.
Mm-hmm. I like the one they did for Enterprise where it's 15 minutes of sick bay at night and you just hear Phlox clipping his toenails, raking his tongue.
You hear random creatures squawk every now and again. I want to hear that. Send me the link, please. It might be oddly relaxing.
So, Suzanne, what do you think about the premise of this episode, though? Not just the viruses themselves, but the idea of it's an action-oriented Janeway. She is Space Rambo.
It actually came across to me, the episode, as more of an alien-type reach.
Or the movie Alien.
Or I saw Janeway as Ellen Ripley / Sarah Connor, because she wasn't taking anybody's stuff and she was kicking some ass.
Anytime Suzanne says slash, I get worried.
That comes later, Philip.
Well, it also reminded me of, and again, I'm sorry to keep doing this, but Picard, when in First Contact and Insurrection, where he gets sweaty and in a tank top somehow in every movie. For some
Insurrection? Really? I forgot all about this.
Yeah, when he's in the in Ruffles, because that's what we call him on Earl Grey, when he's in Ruffles' ship that's about to, you know, kill the planet and Tim.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that happen. I was thinking First Contact.
Yeah.
Where he's in the tank top.
Yeah, but this and I'm certainly, and I know this is going to sound funny after this, everything we said, but I don't mean to be crass, but this episode, I had never thought of Janeway as like, I'll just say it, hot. Like, I was like, oh, you know, like every, you know, like, oh, but like, you know, suddenly we get like, oh, I'm sorry. Is the temperature getting hot? I guess I'll have to take off all this stuff and get sweaty. But like, you know, and I'm joking, but I'm being serious. But I was kind of like watching this, like, wow, Mulgrew kind of has it going on. I'm not going to lie.
Tell you what, this is a real thing, you guys. She worked with a personal trainer leading up to this episode to work on her biceps just to give them a little more definition. I think it paid off.
I think so, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, I told you, Char, a few shows back when we were talking about Captains versus Zombies, the StarTrek.com poll.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of this episode, if I were a zombie or a macro virus, I guess to keep with the theme of this episode, and I saw her coming at me with that rifle and those biceps, I would be very scared.
Oh, yeah, you're dead.
For some reason, I can hear the female cue, like...
That's all.
I was, you know, like, nice guns. I'm not talking about the phaser.
Yeah! Well done, Gilfus. Very good.
Were we aware, and Char, you tell me, is there a commando kit in main engineering? Like, let me just open this up. Has my backpack.
Yeah.
All my grenades and everything.
Like, in case you need to cut somebody's arm off or something.
This survival kit is in there. We've never seen it before. I don't think we've seen... No, I think we do see it later. When we have more Borg threats, but this is the first time she breaks it out, and yeah, this is apparently a thing.
And also,
but it's in the weirdest place.
I know, it's just like right there. Like, why? Anybody could break into that thing and take whatever they need. It just seems really kind of weird.
Because I would take that backpack. That was an awesome backpack.
Well, the one problem I had with the backpack was, like, whoever designed it, like, wouldn't it be cool if it had a little belt, right? You know, and it, you know, you could make it all functional. But, like, I swear about half the episode is her unbuckling the backpack and buckling it back on. I'm like, you could have, like, shaved off a good 10 minutes. Put that money towards CGI, and it would have been.
That's true. She really did, didn't she? She needed, like, a more functional backpack where she could, like, swing it around, open it up, get what she needs, and then sling it back.
Or it needed to be Velcro, like her turtleneck.
Okay. I was thinking apparently. A fanny pack would be better, like a survival fanny pack.
See, then the hotness factor goes way down.
I know. We already get Voyager being made fun of as the, you know, mommy show. You can't stop it.
Yeah, are you kidding? That would have destroyed all credibility of the show entirely. And Mulgrew's career along with it.
See, I think another thing that would have been useful is if the Voyager crew, if they had someone like Dwight from The Office who just hid weapons all around the ship. So then Janeway could just pull a dagger out.
Maybe that's what this is. They just got random things hidden in engineering.
Right.
Maybe. Well, I mean, B'Elanna, you know, half the time she likes to hide weapons.
There's a Bat'leth somewhere by the warp core. We just don't see this.
It's an odd type of geocaching.
Yeah.
See, is that how she, like, runs engineering? Like, all of her people are, like, scared. Like, they don't know at any moment where she's hidden a weapon. So it's like, you better do that level 2 diagnostic or else B'Elanna.
Yeah, she says, let me just punch up this diagnostic here. And everyone's, like, stepping back because they don't know if that's the control panel where the Metlith is hidden.
Right.
So I think the idea of having a more action-oriented Janeway like this, I mean, it works well for me. You know, we don't need... I tweeted this yesterday, too. I was watching this, and I was just pretending the whole time that it was not Kate Mulgrew, but it was Genevieve Bouillol playing Janeway throughout this episode to see, like, would this work as Janeway? And I came to the conclusion that Voyager as a series probably wouldn't have happened if she had not dropped out of the project.
Okay, yeah. I do not ever want to envision Genevieve Bouillol in a tank top holding a compression phaser rifle and trying to act all badass ever again.
What? No. I think she would have interacted with the tac-tac better because of her Canadian-French background.
She would have nailed that and failed the rest. You're right.
She would have known the mimes very well.
Yes, this is true. She would have done very well in that respect, but everything else would have gone straight to pot in this episode. We wouldn't be talking about it. They would have canceled the show.
Do you feel like there's too much of the Rambo element? I mean, that's what it's. She's going around a ship, but it's really like the ship is a jungle. She's going around this jungle pursuing these creatures. And do you feel like there's too much of that in this episode? When you leave this episode, I mean, how do you feel? Do you feel like that was a great action episode? That was a great virus hunt? Do you feel like that was an interesting story, Star Trek story itself? Because what Brandon Braga was trying to do here, I understand what he's saying in his premise, but for me, this episode it's a little bit too straightforward. It's like you've got the cold open, and then after that, it's just like we've got to go get these bugs out of the ship. And it's like you guys said, she spent so much time, you know, opening and closing her backpack all the way through.
Well, I think one thing that surprised me about this episode, watching it this time, was that I kind of remembered that it's the one Janeway, like I said, you know, gets hot and sweaty and does things. But I know that's how Suzanne's synopsis goes. But like they have the flashback with the doctor. I was like, this is like 20 minutes. And like by the time the flashback ends and they're like back to, you know, hot Janeway, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. She was doing that, wasn't that? I just thought we were in another episode. I was all ready for that to go on.
Okay, so question for you guys. I think the flashback is necessary for us to make it a Star Trek episode and for us to know how the virus and all got on the ship. At the same time, if you're trying to do a straight action story, do you really need to know how this thing got on the ship in the first place?
If you're going for straight action, you don't need to know.
Yeah, but I think it helps.
You know it's a problem, you just deal with it.
I think it helps, though. I think it gives us some context as to why they are where they're at. when Janeway and Neelix get back to the ship. And this is not the most memorable Robert Picardo performance, but it does help. I don't know. I'm not a big, like, straight-up action flick fan, and yet I'll say right now that I do like this episode. It does lack substance, though, and that's actually a big criticism I have of really heavy action flicks just in general. I mean, I really don't like to go to movies like that, because all it is just fighting and shooting and pew-pew-pew-pew-pew, and okay, and then you leave feeling really empty because, ooh, the special effects were awesome, but then there was really not a whole lot else to it. This episode has a tiny bit more substance to that, but okay, they're going to go for an action episode. That's fine. Once is good, though. Like, I'm glad this is not every week. I wouldn't be tuning in every week if this is all we got every week.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know you
I'm
would,
I'm imagining Philip. Janeway hot and sweaty right now.
I know, Philip. I'm looking at you on the screen, and I just saw a reflection of Janeway in her tank top on your glasses right there.
It was the way I gestured.
What is that website you've got pulled up?
I'll explain.
He's looking at GIFs on Tumblr.
Well, you know, this, and I know I'm doing it. I'm just take a drink every time, every listeners. I do this, listeners.
But again? This is like, really?
This is Starship Mine.
What part of basically. TNG does this remind you of, Philip?
Starship Mine. You know, Die Hard in Space with Picard.
It is. Well, I thought the same thing, actually. Yeah.
No, you're right, well, but that's awesome.
But that's not a, I mean, and that's, no, I'm not like saying like, oh, they did it. No, I mean, I think every Star Trek incarnation should have that. Captain alone, like, what's this captain made of, right? Captain alone retaking their ship. And so this is Voyager's, you know, we did. I don't know what you would say would be Enterprise's or DS9's version of that. But I mean, that's sort of like, this is what the captain is, all alone, having to retake their ship by themselves.
You know, you make a good point, Philip. We do need to see badass Janeway in action. We need to prove that she is a great thinker. We know that. She's got a scientific background. We know all that. But you know what? We need to know that she can get stripped down to the tank top and get physical every once in a while, too. And prove her mettle that way. So, yeah, we did. We needed to see it at least once.
That's what Chakotay always says.
Well, if only he would have seen it just once, right?
Yeah, he wouldn't have if it weren't for the monkey.
Honestly, this is not Chakotay's sexiest episode. I have to say that.
No.
Because of the bugs flying out of his neck, I was like, oh.
Can we talk about that?
Why'd you have to do that to me? Why?
This is...
Why?
And this isn't a criticism, but this is disgusting. But I mean, it has to be. But it's like,
nature,
wow.
Guys.
You guys really worked on this. And I have to give you credits, prop department. Obviously, I see where the CGI money went. Like, to have the bugs coming out, it's like, oh my, ugh. But it works. Disgustingly, but it works.
Why couldn't they have shown it on Harry instead of Chakotay? I mean, really, why?
Well, they did
that?
Show the big, like, scab kind of thing in his neck on Harry.
I just thought it was the herpes coming back.
Look at it
this
way,
the herpes
Suzanne.
Hasn't happened yet.
Look at it this way,
Suzanne.
Because
he's not getting any at this point.
Whoever it happened to, they're going to need you to nurse them back to health. Now, wouldn't you rather nurse Chakotay back to health than Harry?
Oh, this is
I personally would,
okay,
yes.
This is another fanfic idea. This is Janeway nursing Coco back to health.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Oh.
Make some notes.
Let's talk after the show, Suzanne.
So I have a couple of points here. I think let's talk about the CGI itself first, since we're already talking about these things coming out of their neck and flying around the ship. One thing that stands out to me here is the fact that, and they've talked about this on extras, that this was almost like a trial for them. What could we do with CGI aliens? But you can see how this leads us eventually to Species 8472.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. They get better by the time they get to Species 8472. But here, I mean, and it's hard for us to think about this now because we're so used to the fact that they can do anything with CGI these days and it just looks completely real. But at the time this was done, I mean, this was kind of some big stuff that they were doing on television, some stuff that hadn't really been done before. And I think that it stands out to me sort of as a Voyager feel. This is something that was, for me at the time, was kind of unique. If I saw this, it feels like Voyager, because with TNG, they couldn't do this kind of thing. They didn't have the technology yet. And DS9 didn't do these kinds of things just because they didn't tell these kinds of stories in the first place. So you're generally not going to have this type of CGI on the show. So what did you think about the actual CGI here, though, in bringing the viruses to life and where it leads us in the series?
I think for the time, it's really good. I mean, CGI is really still in its infancy when this aired in 1997. And so, of course, now we're spoiled with it all over the place, like you said. But back then, not only was it expensive, but it was very time consuming to do. And to make it look realistic, they were kind of teetering on it at this point. I feel like the macrovirus, though, was a really great experiment to test it on, because you can make it look alien and it can look a little fake and you can get away with it. So it was really good use of judgment on their part. And I feel like it came together really nicely. Like, I feel like Mulgrew and Picardo do a great job of, like, dodging the alien. I don't know. I thought it was skillful and
So I was watching specifically, I watched the episode this morning and I also watched it yesterday, and I was watching specifically for that, because that's hard to do. I mean, look at the Star Wars prequels. It's not done very well in there either. You know, the eye lines don't always match up. You kind of feel like in scenes where Jar Jar was going to be in, you can tell that, like, they're not quite sure exactly where he is in front of them. It's hard to do, definitely. I think that for the time that this was done, because it was something new and something they weren't experienced with, I think I would agree with you, Char, that they did a pretty good job. But I also feel like you can tell a lot of the time that they're trying their best to interact with something that's not there. And then the CGI guys, with this being something new for them as well, trying their best to make it all mesh. And it feels a little bit awkward for me.
What I want to see is how this is going to look remastered.
Well, that was my next question. Do you think they're going to have to completely redo? Because I don't think that the CGI is going to hold up in HD.
Probably not.
They'll have to absolutely redo it.
Yeah.
Because I think you compare this to Equinox. I mean,
Wait, Philip. I'm confused. Hold on. That's not a TNG. Next Generation episode.
Well, it's a two-parter, much like we invented the two-parter. That's sort of like, you have the CGI aliens, you know, running around the air. So, I mean, I think that's when it got, you can definitely tell they perfected it. I'd be curious to know whether the CGI designers felt like this was really, really good, or were they like, it's like a B, B plus.
They were not happy with the results themselves.
Well, because I would say that in some ways it's good you didn't see a lot of it, because that makes it more spooky. Like, it's like, you know, don't show the monster till the end kind of stuff, because you know, you sort of have that point of view of the bug. You don't see the bug, and I think that the later it takes to see it, the spookier and scarier it kind of is.
Yeah. Well, they have said that they were not really happy with the results. The CGI guys were not so happy with the results. On the other hand, the producers were happy with it and felt that it turned out well. And I think that I would agree with Brannon and Rick and the producers that for the time, I think it turned out well. I also see the position of the CGI and the visual effects team, being a creative myself, being very critical of my own work, of looking at it and going, you know, we could have done better there.
They were also under a massive time crunch, too.
Yeah.
You know, I read
and
on
budget
Memory
crunch
Alpha,
as well, because they didn't budget for the amount of time it actually took to do the CGI.
Yeah. They gave them 2 hours for what actually needed 6 hours.
Well, they budgeted for 2 hours when they needed to budget for six. But Char, you know, as a designer, that the actual number of hours was probably way more than even that.
They were probably pulling all-nighters trying to get this out and doing it as a labor of love.
Yeah.
Just so they could get it right. Yes, I understand all too well.
So basically, when it was time to put in the CGI, did they come in and say, "Time's up"?
No, that hadn't happened yet.
Oh, goodness.
But it would have been great. And by the way, you stole my line. But that's all right. You did a bang-up job.
You can say make it so. I'll allow it.
Oh, I got to work on that before I say it.
The other point I had earlier when I said I had a couple of points and I went to the CGI first is that if we look for character development, this, as I mentioned earlier, is the third episode after Future's End. So the doctor has his mobile emitter, and it's a new thing. And so they're starting to make use of that to allow him to get around the ship. And that's another reason why I like the flashback portion of this episode, because we actually do get to see the doctor being excited about being able to be footloose and fancy free and go around the ship and actually play a bigger role and help the crew a bit more. And then he's just like Data. I'm sorry, Philip. I did the TNG reference here. He's just like Data when he goes down to the caves, where he's giving way too much information. And Coco is like,
"Yeah,
that's great, but we really don't need that much information, Mr. Data. I mean, Doctor."
Well, I couldn't tell how soon it was, but I knew it was soon because it's like they kind of make a big deal. Like, I'll have to go use my autonomous emitter. I'm gonna get the mobile emitter. We know what it's called. We got it. You know. I felt like they also said like it's gonna like take a while to download, and like they showed it like 10 minutes later. He's just like boom, boom, down. I'm like, well, apparently it takes like 5 seconds to download. You made it sound like it was like a whole project.
They have really fast internet connections in the future, Philip.
Yeah.
But I also, for those who, and we get this a lot in TNG, for those who complain about Voyager continuity, I love, my favorite line was like, "Neelix, you've got fluid in your lungs." And he's like, "Lung?
Lung.
I have one."
Yes, that was so good. Yes. Agreed. Thank goodness they remembered. Oh my God.
Well, the other continuity point in this episode comes from Parallax, which is when we first found out that the holodeck runs on its own power grid. And I'm thinking, I think about continuity that I want to see in a series, the admission that we have to use the holodeck to come up with plots and therefore it has its own power grid, that's not the kind of continuity that I'm looking for.
Yeah, moronic plot device.
So what...
It's like only necessary systems should have their own power sources, life support, which they listed. Holodeck should not be one of them.
Look, they like to have fun on the Intrepid classes. All right, you know, we're not like the boring diplomats.
But if there's an emergency, you shouldn't be on the holodeck.
You're either sciencing or you're holodecking. We science hard and we play hard here on the Intrepid.
You know,
class.
That's kind of Voyager in a nutshell. You got Tom and Harry coming up with holoprograms, and then everybody else is doing scientific exploration. Ooh, a nebula! There's coffee in there. Let's check it out.
But Suzanne, there was an emergency on the ship in this episode, and you did need to holodeck, I'm making that a verb, in order to save the day, because what would Janeway have done if she could not have sacrificed all of the holographic resort goers to the viruses?
Yeah, I do like the fact...
She would have come up with another solution.
She would have scienced something else. But I love the fact that she basically threw a bomb into this Baywatch and Space Holo program. That was pretty cool.
And that the explosion was green.
But yeah.
But now they have a damaged holodeck that needs to be repaired.
Well, it was holodeck 2. They still have holodeck 1, don't worry.
What you don't know, Suzanne, is that you don't need to worry about that on Voyager, because Lieutenant Cooter will have it all fixed by next episode.
Reset button takes care of that every week.
I think they should paint a big 01 on the side of Voyager. Paint a rebel battle flag across the hull on the top.
Wow.
Just rename it the General Lee.
What sound would it make when it goes to warp?
It would, of course, Philip, be the horn.
You guys.
You know, I feel like.
Does that mean that Janeway has to wear Daisy Dukes?
Yes. Oh, wow. I'm picturing it. Hold on, I'm picturing it.
Philip, put your clothes back on.
Well, no, that's the way they come. You just a Velcro pole. You know, I know it looks like a pullover, and any obvious person would think that's what it looks like. But no, it's just a Velcro in the back, which it brings up a question. How do they get dressed in the morning? Like, do you have to, like, find a crewmate to, like, Velcro you up in the back? Like, how do you close that thing? I don't know.
Jamie DeChicote.
Sorry, Captain. I only know how to take that off of you. Oh, God.
You mean it goes both ways?
Well then, we're gonna
go goodness, Chris Char. We should have had a 5-person panel and just had Jenny come on the show this week.
We should have. Could you imagine where this would have gone? I mean, even without Jenny, we are pushing the ratings so hard.
Then we would need 6 people so we could have Drew on as well.
We've got to make Drew watch.
We don't have any
innocence
on here. Of course. That's why. You always need one.
Someday, we got to do that.
So, anyway, I like the fact that the Doctor got... This is some character development for the Doctor here, and he gets to move on through the episode. He gets to go on his mission. Chakotay tells him that you did a good job. What more can you want if you're a hologram?
Yeah, that's fulfillment right there.
And even as much as people make fun of Neelix, and even though it said ha-ha in this episode, I mean, the whole ambassador thing, I mean, that does continue. Mm-hmm. Ambassador Neelix.
That's a great thing to point out. Yeah, and this is kind of the point in the series, too, where he really does need a little something else to do, because he's no longer that much of a guide. They're leaving what territory he is familiar with, and yeah, of course he's going to keep on cooking, but this is another way that he can remain useful.
Well, I thought that him knowing about the Tac-Tac and their language was already a bit of a stretch in the third season. I mean, remember his ship when they met him. He's not scooting all around the entire Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, I thought it was more, not that he was familiar with them, but more just he understood their language and adapted really quickly to...
But how would you? I mean, these are people that you really need to meet these people and spend time with them to actually be able to communicate in their language. It's not a language you're going to pick up through
like this in the Delta
books.
Quadrant. I don't know. I'm kind of trying to
maybe,
be an apologist.
I think what it is, remember, he's in that garbage field. I'm sure that's not the name of it. But
it's
anyway,
the debris field.
Well, and it's his debris field.
Yes.
And he's very possessive.
yes, he is.
But there could be a whole bunch of ships, and it's basically sort of like YouTube in space. He just goes to the other ships, watching their logs, you know, with whatever the Neelix version of popcorn is, which I would never want to eat. And, you know, he's just watching all the different, about all the different species in the Delta Quadrant. Yes.
I guess. Yeah.
Or he took a correspondence course, Tac-Tac 101.
Yeah.
Well, I do hear that the Tac-Tac channel does get a lot of views on Space YouTube. It's very popular.
That's true.
I can see why.
Now, I do have to say, this whole time, I've been thinking, instead of the sexy time holodeck, what if they'd used Fairhaven instead?
Ugh. Right.
Good riddance.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen them sacrificed.
Yeah.
I think most fans
Michael Sullivan first. Come on.
Yeah,
I want to see that.
Take him
out. I want to see that cow running.
I can imagine like a Twister sort of scene where you see the cow flying through the air in the holodeck.
I'm just picturing cows running down the street of Fairhaven with that giant virus chasing them.
They're trying to run as fast as they can. And they're getting stabbed and gooed on.
And then Harry tells Tom, "Help me, they're chasing my girlfriend."
This should have happened. Oh my god. All right, another fanfic. Let's write it.
It's too bad. Yeah, at this point, we don't have that program yet. I'm sure it's there.
Such a shame.
Maybe. Maybe they were working on it already. I don't know, but we hadn't seen it yet, which is too bad.
Yeah.
Well, Kathy wouldn't sacrifice her man for this. Ugh, get over it, man.
He's just a holographic vibrator. She can replicate a new one.
So are you saying, because I know this will never be in the show, I'm going to say this. So are you saying in Year of Hell, that instead, like in your version, instead of like a watch, Chakotay gives her something else with his replicated credits?
Time's up.
he always likes to give Catherine his best. So.
What are you saying, Suzanne? Are you saying that it was modeled after Chakotay?
Yep.
Does it have a tattoo on it?
It's too big to put. Oh, God. It's too big for her to put on her side.
Well, if you like his, mine's bigger.
Not big enough.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, my God.
I don't even know where to go from here.
What have we done? This podcast. This is Oh man, this has been fun in
so
the 69 because I remember
someone
it.
Someone turned up the temperature.
It's seriously.
Go ahead and take off 3 layers of clothes.
I'm really feeling that warp plasma.
Woo, is that what that is? Woo. Okay. Well, I'm so sorry, Chris. We hijacked your show.
I was just thinking, you know, I suggested that she have, instead of a backpack, she have a fanny pack, but I'm not sure that'll fit in her fanny pack.
Holy lots of lube.
She needs a special shoulder holster for that.
Well, Char, that won't be... That will not be a problem because there's plenty of lube all around the ship in this episode.
This is true.
Wait, are you saying like in engineering, it's basically like your bedside drawer? You just open it up and like, there's everything right there.
Who knows what else B'Elanna's got in there waiting and waiting.
That ship of the Valkyries, I'm telling you.
Okay.
Write down time mark, resume recording here.
Got it. Wow.
So while we're kind of on the Doctor at this point, still talking about his character growth and Char, you said earlier that you thought maybe this wasn't Robert Picardo's best performance, but you know, he's always funny as the Doctor. He always has great lines, and we were talking on the other side of the room, Philip.
The other side of the room.
About one thing that you like in this episode.
Yeah, and I just love the, because I think one thing, I don't know if, whether it's been listening to The Journey or in episodes of The Ready Rooms, but I know there's kind of discussion about, like, the Doctor, like, doesn't he just know everything? Like, doesn't he just instantly download from the computer? Like, does he really need to, like, ask people things?
Oh, right.
But he has, like, genuinely, like, oh, I've suddenly forgotten for a moment, you right. know, I must have a virus.
Yeah.
that I've forgotten how to get to wherever this they were going, you know, life support or environmental control. And Gina was like, oh, you take a left at the auxiliary control and go 5 turbo lifts down. And then you take a, you know, like 8 directions. Like I can only remember 3 directions at a time without writing it down.
Those were ridiculous directions.
Yeah. And then like the Doctor's like, oh, yes. And then you go over by impulse manifold, turn a left, do the hokey pokey, go down. And then you're there like, yeah. Who designed this ship?
You know what? It's not a matter of design, though. It's the way the terminology is. It's too complicated.
Well, it does make you feel like the ships seem to get more and more complicated, not just on Voyager, but in general in Star Trek. The ships seem to get more and more complicated on the inside as the plot requires them to. So, depending on the story, there's no telling. Like, it could take you 45 minutes to get there. Because you've got to crawl through so many different Jeffrey's tubes. And then there's the Johnny's tubes, which are smaller and you can barely fit in. And
then go through a turbo lift shaft while singing for Jean-Jean.
Right,
true. Mm-hmm.
You have to do that. So,
But
I like the line, though, because it was like the audience commenting. He is the audience commenting on Star Trek at that point.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it made me think of sort of the meme that's like in every episode of Star Trek, no matter what incarnation... It's like when the captain or even the chief engineer or whoever is like, oh, man, they know this station or they know this ship like the back of their hand. Like, who could actually know all right. this? I could captain, you know, the Voyager or the Enterprise D for like 100 years and still not know how, you know, every part of it.
That's how Argyle dodges Picard for so long and manages to live in the Jeffrey's tubes for years and years and even gets on the Enterprise E.
Well, it has the bottomless pit.
So. Right. Well, that's the place Picard didn't know was in his own ship. And that's why that's where Argyle set up his whole gin distillery on the E.
It's bigger on the inside.
Yeah. Plus, it's very convenient. You know, when you have stuff you need to dump out, you just pour it down the bottomless pit.
Right. Hey, Argyle, he is a pretty clever guy.
He really is. It was all an act, that all the stuff we saw in season 1, TNG. He was just pretending to be incompetent as an engineer.
Yeah, he's really a genius, but only when it comes to booze.
Yeah.
Everyone should have a specialty.
That's right. We've all got to be good at something.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about Kes in this episode. Why not?
Because she had 3 lines, and they were all, yes, Doctor.
Well, it was kind of, you know, because watching this, I queued it up. I'm like, oh, season 3, okay, da-da-da-da. And but then you sort of get that, like, oh, this is where we are in the Doctor-Kes relationship, where it's like, you know, buck him up. That's her role. And, you know, that part, like, buck up the Doctor. Like, did I do good? You did good, Doc. Meh. And then she's like, okay.
What I noticed about Kes in this episode for the first time, because I'm about, as we record this, at the end of this week, on Saturday, I'm having eye surgery. By the time this drops, I will have already had the surgery and will be able to see clearly again. But I've recently had to go through lots of eye exams, and Kes looking into this thing with the blue light shining on her face and all, mm-hmm. I felt like I was in the middle of eye exams again, and Kes was the nurse.
I can see clearly now, the Kes has gone.
Oh, my.
Oh, man. Now we're going to have to get Philip and Matthew together so they can sing on a show.
I want to hear a duet.
I can see all viruses in my way. Oh,
God. You know what I want to hear is a duet of Judge a Book by Its Cover. That would be awesome.
Dueling judgments.
Dueling Ooh. Judgments.
Hey.
All right. Well, let's go into final thoughts here. I think we've talked about everything that we have to talk about in this episode. It's such a straightforward story, really, that you get on the ship, you chase bugs around, you kill the bugs, you're dying, you wait for someone else to call you, let you know that their ship has a bug infestation as well. Janeway could set up a whole business like pest control in the Delta Quadrant. So, final thoughts on the episode and our ratings. Char, what are your final thoughts?
Well, like you said, this is a pretty straightforward episode. It's a lot of action, and it's a fun little romp. But like I said earlier, I don't think I would want this every week. I don't even want this once a season. I'm glad that it was kind of more of an experimental thing, and they did it, and a lot of people really love this episode, so I do feel like they pulled it off. But, you know, when you think about the heart of Star Trek, like, what is the moral, the message, the meaning? It really is lacking there. And the only thing that I could possibly come up with is this is a cautionary tale for what's going to happen with antibiotic resistance if we're not careful.
That's not a bad point at all, Char, actually. I don't know if that was meant to be a joke or not, but actually, yeah, I could take that.
It was halfway serious. That was all I could possibly come up with. And so that's pretty lean. And therefore, I feel I can only give this episode 3 biceps.
Oh, wow. Okay. How about you, Suzanne?
Well, it definitely was a different Voyager-type episode. I did like all the action. I did like Janeway stalking around the ship with her big gun and her guns all on display. It's a good episode for a rewatch, not something that I would watch constantly because I need more. More of a story and more Chakotay. There was not enough Chakotay.
True, he's only in like what, 2 scenes?
2 scenes and the bugs in the next thing. I still can't get past that. But it's a nice way to pass a good 40-45 minutes.
So what's your rating?
My rating would be 7 tank tops not covered with a mucilaginous compound.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's my preference as well. Not that I wear tank tops, but if I did. All right. How about you, Philip?
Well, I have to say that, you know, you have this funny cold opening, which is random if you're not expecting it. You have this, what I think is very interesting story. We haven't mentioned the closing. I'm going to mention it. So we close with soft jazz.
Oh, yeah. And painting.
Yes.
Why is she painting in her bedroom?
I don't know. She suddenly turned into Data. TNG
well,
reference.
Yeah, by the way, she paints in season 3. Let's not forget that.
That's right. When she gets her Da Vinci fascination.
Yeah, yeah.
But the soft jazz was killing me. Like, and then like that's how they end the episode with the Voyager going off like doo-doo-doo-doo. I'm like, I feel like I should be buying the album, listening to a podcast by Chris. I mean, like, I will smooth sounds of the Delta Quadrant.
You know what it reminded me of was a Starbucks, and I was just waiting to hear, like, in the background, Neelix saying, you know, what can I get started for you?
Well, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that makes Janeway, that helps her relax after what she went through, paint, feel like she's in a coffee shop, even though, you know, it's not quite the same for her.
I have a...
But that's not proper ready room behavior.
I have a latte for Catherine Janawa.
Suzanne, I would think by now that you would know that proper ready room behavior on Voyager is whatever Janeway says it is.
That's right.
Well, then why wasn't Chakotay in there with her more often?
It wasn't crunch time. Though, judging by how she looked, she's been doing her crunches.
It's true. She did kind of, you know, brush him off for the day. Like, I've had enough exercise for a little while, oh, buddy.
I'm a little bit sore already.
Look at you, Chris. Look at you getting in on the action. Oh, man. I love it.
All right. So anything else, Philip?
No, not for my rating, I'm going to say I give this 24 unnecessary directions.
Good one.
Very good. Well, what do I have to say about this episode? I think that they succeeded pretty well in doing what they set out to do, which was to make an action episode with a lot less dialogue. If that's the goal, they did it pretty well. I think the CGI worked well for the time. It doesn't look great today, of course. It will have to be completely redone for a remastered Voyager in HD, because I really don't think it'll hold up. But I think they did a good job for the time. And it's an episode that I can enjoy watching. It's not one that I'm going to go back to over and over. And the cold open and then the jazz ending are kind of out of place, kind of like tacked on to this other story. But overall, you know, I mean, I like the Doctor stuff as well. So, and plus, I mean, we're podcasters, and this is an episode where Neelix is podcasting. So that's something as well. So I'm going to give this episode 5 seconds of sustained jazz hands.
Wow.
So when are we announcing Neelix being added to the network?
I'm working on that. I don't like to announce things until they're completely done.
Okay.
So stay tuned. Yeah. You weren't supposed to let the cat out of the bag there on that, Philip. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Char and Suzanne. Before we go, Suzanne, tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs.
You can find me on the Twitter at Suzanne Abbott, and come by our Facebook page and look at our question of the day.
That's right. Thought-provoking questions by Suzanne.
And they're not all about Chakotay, because we keep having to tear her down on every single one. Like, No, you got to branch out.
I keep trying.
And they're not all Velcro related.
Yeah, not yet, anyway.
All right. So, Char, where can people find you on the network and around the interwebs?
Well, you can, of course, find me here on the Ready Room, probably a little too often these days. But I'm having a blast. So, you know, hey, I'm glad you keep having me back, Chris. And, of course, you can also find me around Trek FM with my co-host Tristan Riddell, the international sex symbol himself, doing To the Journey.
To the Journey!
To the Journey!
And new episodes drop every Thursday. Also, you can find me on the Twitter, and my handle is Oh the Profanity.
No way.
I know, shocker.
If people heard the unedited versions of The Ready Room, they would understand a lot better.
They really would, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, it was great and a little bit kind of hot talking with Char and Suzanne about this episode.
Do you mean hot in the way that, you know, Janeway had to strip down because she was getting too sweaty on the ship?
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to have to turn on the air conditioning here. It's temperature's been rising here as we've been talking.
Well, yeah, it was a really fun discussion, and I'm glad we finally did this one because we're always talking about Janeway and her biceps in this episode, and it was about time that we actually covered it.
Yeah.
But of course, it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network, so here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And then next week, it's like, hey, Worf, what's going on? He's like, oh, not much. Just, you know, yeah, walking around the bridge like I didn't have my spine grown, you know, last week.
Earl Grey.
You know, he's on the Enterprise. He doesn't have to be written into the movie because, hey, he's on the Enterprise. Everyone's on the Enterprise.
He gets,
you know,
a chair.
He gets a chair. I mean, the whole beginning is all about his promotion. Yeah, exactly.
It's basically a Worf-centered movie now that I think about it.
The Orb.
Even Odo wasn't able to keep his, you know, quote-unquote hands clean. The fact that he has this kind of sordid past that we didn't really know about until now is really, really interesting.
To the Journey!
I think the audience by and large kind of saw Data as a machine and was probably a little more on the side of Maddox, as in Data is it, not he, and that sort of a thing, without even realizing it. And then Measure of a Man took us from that point to, you know what? This guy has the right to choose.
Warp 5.
The TV viewer who doesn't know anything about that, they're probably more like the actual people of the Enterprise era, where the idea that we would have these starships that can take us into the depths of the galaxy at Warp 5, this is all new for them as well.
The Ready Room.
Deep Space Nine is closer to the original series than any other Star Trek show in terms of ideals and, yeah, conflict. There is conflict in the original series.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
Wow. What's interesting, though, is this isn't even a threat. I mean, that be your last battlefield. It was a threat that Kirk was making in this episode. Picard's just like, yeah, we don't know who's taking our ship, and nobody's allowed to have our ship, so you know, let's blow it up.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Although there is a certain darker aspect to the story than, let's say, one would find in Roddenberry's version of humanity, there is also room for hope.
Literary Treks.
I can see that Jean-Luc might have told her, you know, I was reading Janeway's logs, and can you believe that Q got married and has a son?
Continuing mission.
You're watching the Mantrap, and then for no reason at all, they go into the botany. Well, I want to call it the botany bay, even though I know that's not right. The botanical?
I think it's just botany room.
The botany room. And there's this person's hand in a pink glove as a space plant, and you're just like, what?
Melodic Treks.
The latest Thompson Holiday Company advert in the United Kingdom features William Shatner's rendition of the Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Axanar, the official podcast.
And as soon as I got back to LA, I sat down and in about 3 or 4 days wrote this demo suite of 4 cues. And, you know, thankfully it resonated with Alec and Christian, and you know, here we are.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. And if you're an Apple user, head on over in iTunes or the Podcasts app on iOS and hit the subscribe button. Of course, you can stream the shows through those applications. But if you hit subscribe, you'll get the show as soon as I publish it. And that also helps us out a lot because it helps us rise up in the search results. And that helps other Star Trek fans find the Ready Room as they're searching the iTunes store for Star Trek podcasts. And there are so many of them out there these days. We can use your help in rising up. Now, if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find us in many, many different places, including Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, BlackBerry, Windows Phone. We're also on SoundCloud, and you can stream from our website, and you can also download the MP3 file. On our show page on the website, just look at the SoundCloud player underneath the thumbnail art and look in the upper right-hand corner of that player and you'll see the button to download the file. You can also grab the RSS link while you're there and pop that into any application that you like. And while you're in these places getting your podcasts, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. We love to hear what you think about the show, and that also helps us rise up in the search results and helps other fans find the Ready Room. Another way that you can help us out is to support us on Patreon. You can become part of the team, part of the network, by becoming a patron. That's at patreon.com/trekfm, patreon.com/trekfm. If you go to that page, you'll see our current goals as well as milestone contribution levels. And we have many different perks for you in exchange for your support. And those include digital items, of course, but also things like an opportunity to sit in on the recording of the show, or to become part of our content development team, or even to become an associate producer. And I would like to thank Renee Roberts, associate producer of The Ready Room here, for all of her support. As I've mentioned in past weeks, Renee's been with us since the very beginning. I mean, the very beginning of the network. Huge supporter of ours. I love Renee, and I'm glad that she's here with us as part of The Ready Room. And I hope you'll join our team as well. So go check us out at patreon.com/trekfm. Now, if you'd like to leave feedback on today's show, there are many ways that you can do that. You can go to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Just choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that'll come to us by email. Join us in our listeners group on Facebook, the Babel Conference. Just type the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field or click discussion on the menu bar on our website. And then on Twitter, our username is trekfm, and you can also find us on our regular page on Facebook. facebook.com/trekfm, and you can even send us a voicemail if you go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. That's the word speak and the word pipe. Or just go to the show page on our website, and you'll see right over in the left sidebar the little tool that lets you do that. And you can record a message for us just using the microphone in your webcam or your smartphone or your tablet and upload that to us as an MP3 file right there from the page. All right, so Philip, when you're not helping Janeway run around the ship and get rid of all the bugs that have infested Voyager, where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm used to being around Deep Space Nine with Chief O'Brien knocking out those bugs, but I guess they're kind of different kind of bugs. But anyway, they can find me on Twitter, and my handle is NC Public Servant. That's NC for North Carolina. And then, of course, they can find me each and every week on Earl Grey, talking about all things The Next Generation with my wonderful co-host, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue.
Very good. And we're going to have to get you on the 602 Club sometime to talk some other non-Trek geek topics as well. Should we do like a Rocky Horror Picture Show on there?
Yeah. In fact, you know, Ruby was in this one part. Oh, wait. Wasn't she in that play with you too? Well, this is going to get awkward.
I couldn't tell. I think she was there, but you know, all of her kids were running around, so I couldn't really find her. There were just too many people there. All right. Well, go check Philip out on Earl Grey if you love TNG. And also for TNG, don't forget to go check out Mission Log, which is here on the network with us now as well. John and Ken are into The Next Generation right now. So really, we have a double dose of TNG for you guys every single week, Tuesday with Earl Grey, and then Thursday with Mission Log.
And there may be a future Mission Earl Grey or Earl Grey Log coming up.
Oh, very, very interesting. A special blend of tea right there, right?
Oh, yes.
Very good. Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, a letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook at facebook.com/C. Brian Jones, and I'm always hanging out in the Babel Conference. So come join that listeners group, and I'd love to talk Star Trek with you over there. Then elsewhere on the network, I do a lot of different shows. You can find me on The Orb, Literary Treks, Warp 5, Continuing Mission, Matterstream Hyperchannel, and the official podcast of Star Trek Axanar, which I co-host with Axanar creator and executive producer Alec Peters. So go check all of those out if you want to hear more of my thoughts on the world of Star Trek. Before we let you go, I would like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible if you go to audibletrial.com/trekfm. If you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks. And if you're already getting them from another source like iTunes, get them from Audible because they have a great selection and they have great prices. In fact, Audible supplies the audiobooks to iTunes. But little secret here, they're a little bit less expensive if you get them from Audible. So head over to Audible and get that trial. Audibletrial.com/trekfm is the URL. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. One more thing that you should check out while you're out there on the interwebs is the project that Larry Nemechek and I are involved in right now, which is called Enterprise in Space. This is a really interesting project that is part of the National Space Society, and it will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. And the orbiter is called the NSS Enterprise, and it will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space. And it's open to students from kindergarten all the way through postgraduate. In addition to that, we'll be testing out different space technologies, which can help us advance space exploration in general in the decades to come. And there's also a design contest going on right now that you can enter. If you have an idea for what the NSS Enterprise should look like, go to enterpriseinspace.org and enter the competition. You don't need to be an engineer. We have people from NASA and elsewhere that are going to handle all of that. We just need your ideas on what the ship should look like. So head on over there and enter that. And while you're there, please contribute to the project. You'll see a button up there for donate. You can also get National Space Society membership as part of your contribution for a much lower rate than it normally costs. And it's just a great way to support science and education. And you can even get your name carried on the ship as a virtual crew member. And the ship will be displayed in a museum when it returns to Earth. So check that out, enterpriseinspace.org. And I hope you enjoy it. Well, Philip, that's everything we have for this week. I'm going to head on back down to the cargo bay. Tom and Harry, they have this project going on. They're building a giant can of Raid. for the next time the ship gets infested with the bogs, and I really want to help them out.
Well, that makes sense. Hopefully they don't trap any nanites like Wesley did, because Seven could be in trouble. But it's time to stick a sweaty captain's tank top in it, because the ready room is done. But I think in some ways, and I would be curious how the creators felt for this episode of like,
you'll come back.
We think, you know, we're like, oh, we know it's a, you know, yeah. B minus.
He's practicing his pose again.
Yeah.
This was not a good time to do it, Philip.
So Philip, you froze. So you said, I would be curious, except you actually said, I would be curia. And then
I was saying about bi curious, but
I think that's how you add emphasis in tac-tac language.
Emphasis. Yes.
Pause for as long as possible. That means you really
I'm actually
mean
Shatnering. That's actually, it's extreme Shatnering.
Oh, I would love to meet the William Shatner tac-tac.
The tac-tac?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Would that not be amazing?
It would take a half an hour just to get a sentence.
It really
and he would also be propositioning you. So it was actually.
Yeah. All right. So, Philip, pick up where you said, I will be curious and go for it.